Before we begin, I note that there are two appellee counsel. Have you discussed division of your time for arguments?
Yes, we have. We've discussed splitting at 5 and 5.
Okay. And would you like the yellow light to come on when you have, say, a minute left in your 5 minutes?
I'd appreciate that.
Would that work for you, Bailiff? Thank you.
What if you said no?
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name's Sig Brower. I'm here representing Steve Clayson. He is a member of the Clayson family. There were 8 children to Ruth and Gene Clayson. Ruth and Gene established an estate plan in 2008. Gene passed away in 2010, and approximately a year later, Ruth created a new trust and a whole set of estate documents, the power of attorney, a trust, a will. Our position here is that Ruth did that out of a response to pressures by one of the children, Susan Bayless. She is a personal representative named in the 2000. She and Brother Lee were personal representatives named in the 2011 will. Lee has, shortly thereafter the estate was open, resigned from that position, so he hasn't served there for quite some time. The case below was decided on summary judgment, and as goes without saying, pretty much, if we were here on a fact-finding decision, we would be at a disadvantage. We're not. We're here on a summary judgment, and that reverses the status of our position, and we are entitled to the benefit of every reasonable inference from the evidence. As the court is aware, the lower court excluded a substantial amount of evidence from 2 affidavits that we offered, exhibits 10 and 11. I'm sorry. I think I got it mixed up. It would have been, it wasn't 10 and 11. Anyway, it was the affidavits of Steve Clayson and
12.
Bonnie Wright.
12.
10 and 11 were affidavits of Sue Bayless and Lee Clayson. And I would note for the court, if you haven't already, that the court below made several findings of fact that were drawn directly from exhibits 10 and 11. 10 and 11 are not in evidence. They were objected to for a variety of reasons. The court never ruled on those objections. It said it would take the objections under advisement. It never ruled on them. Our affidavits, Mr. Clayson, Steve Clayson's, and Bonnie Wright's were objected to. The court ruled on those, and as you also know, excluded 75% of the evidence presented in those affidavits. We believe that was error. There are many statements that are, by their very nature and content, demonstrate personal knowledge, direct knowledge of information that they had. There are also other evidentiary bases that we believe that they should have been admitted for the most part.
How did Susan Orly improve their beneficial interest as a result of the changes in 2011? Because my understanding is the only changes from 2008 to 11 is that the 3 disinherited daughters' children weren't to inherit in the 2008 documents,
yeah,
but
well,
stood to inherit under the 2011.
The 2008 trust provided that specific devises of land were to go to each of the 5 non-disinherited children. The distributions varied substantially from approximately, well, from as much as approximately $500,000 to $1.5 million, perhaps a little less than that, to one of the daughters. So there was a substantial alteration of the distribution plan.
So how did it change for those 2?
For Lee, it changed substantially. It would have increased his distribution. Susan's would not have changed very much. But the other primary purpose for the change was so that Mr. Clayson, Steve Clayson, could be removed as trustee of the 2008 trust or the land. trustee of the land. I'm not saying that right because you aren't trustee of the land, but he would have been trustee of the 08 trust. By the change, he was not a trustee of the 11 trust. So that was a primary focus, and the evidence demonstrates throughout, even if you don't change the court's lower court's position on the evidence that was excluded, there's still substantial evidence in Bonnie Wright's deposition that allude to the fact that Susan had this concern about the 8 trusts, Steve's control of the estate, and she wanted that change. She wanted him removed. She discussed it with Bonnie, and she even discussed with Bonnie how they were going to try to get Lee on their side so that Mom would go along with a new plan to get rid of the 08 plan and implement an 11 plan. In all fairness, I don't think anybody ever expected what was going to happen with the 11 plan, because Jared Gregg, the attorney who Susan Bayless contacted to do that work, ended up committing malpractice and did not do what Ruth asked him to do. He's all over the board in his deposition, which is in evidence, and he says one thing contradicts himself nearly in the same paragraph right after that. So while there's some question about the credibility of his memory and his testimony, there's still there are enough contested facts in his testimony alone to create an issue of fact for a trial court in some respects. But the point is, he testifies in some places that Susan did not contact him, that he was contacted by someone she contacted to get a hold of Mom. Then he says, no, she did call me. Then he says later in his deposition on cross-examination or further redirect, that she spoke with him several times during the process of developing this 2011 estate plan. He also testifies a variety of times that he did not trust Mother's ability to implement a new estate distribution, and therefore the 11 plan was supposed to mirror the 08 plan. And he says repeatedly, I didn't have a problem doing that because I wasn't making any changes in the distribution of the estate. Then he testifies on one hand that he saw the 08 plan before the 11 plan was done, then he didn't see it until after it was done, then he didn't see it until after Mom died. And so he's all over the place. He says he talked to Mom about it, then he says he didn't talk to Mom about it. So it's a real mess in terms of what was done in the 11 plan. The long and the short of it is, Mom didn't know what she was doing. She was doing what Lee and Susan wanted her to do. And that's how the 2011 estate plan involving the trust, the powers of attorney, the will that's at issue here came into being.
And did Mr. Gregg prepare all of those 2011 documents?
He did. And if I can reserve my time, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm David Rowe. I'm appearing on behalf of Susan Bayless, the personal representative. The appellant argues that the undue influence was apparently largely for Susan Bayless to become the fiduciary. Number one, after Ruth Bayless's husband passed away in 2010, she amended that 2008 trust. And in the 2008 trust, she made Lee Clayson as the co-trustee with her, and she made Susan Bayless as a successor trustee. Her 2011 document has Lee and Sue as co-trustees together as successor trustees. It doesn't seem like that's a very significant difference. And in particular, when any trustee is going to have a fiduciary duty to abide by the terms of the document, it's hard to see how this is a major issue. There's no evidence in this case that that I've seen that shows that Susan Bayless comes out significantly different in any way in terms of the disposition to her as compared to, you know, with the 2008 trust as opposed to the 2011 trust. I might also point out that the wills are both pour-over wills. So in the 2008 plan, it's a pour-over will pouring over into that trust. In the 2011 documents, it's a pour-over will pouring over into the 2011 trust. So it doesn't seem like who is the fiduciary of those respective wills bears much significance, since the personal representative is going to need to administer the estate and then fairly promptly pour everything over into a trust.
Well, what about the argument that the 2011 trust altered the distribution of the real estate from 2008?
You know, I'm not clear on that. If you look carefully at the wills that are in the evidence, excuse me, the trust that's in the evidence, the 2008 trust in the evidence, you'll see that there are several unnumbered pages, whereas everything else is numbered, and then it picks up after those several unnumbered pages. And so it's unclear to me whether the unnumbered pages were there to begin with or came to be later, or what their significance is. They aren't initialed, they aren't numbered, and those are the pages that do the specific devises. The testimony from Alan Dobman, who did the 2008 plan, indicates that when they left his office, you know, and there's been another case that involved some quitclaim deeds, mm-hmm. and in that case, they left the office with these quitclaim deeds that, well, it's not clear whether they left the office with the quitclaim deeds or if Mr. Dobman held on to them. But what's clear from the deposition testimony in this case is that Mr. Dobman says that they weren't sure yet what they wanted to do when they left his office with respect to those specific properties. So it seems plausible, although I'm, you know, it's hard to say, that it wasn't clear with their 2008 trust what they intended to do.
As I recall, those deeds were never filed.
Those deeds were never filed. The numbered pages list people to whom specific bequests are to be made, and there's blanks. And then following those blanks, there's a series of a listing of all these different properties. And then numbered pages pick up again, and you go... so that's the numbered, and then the unnumbered pages, they say where it's to go, those specific properties, and they identify individual people, and then we get back to the numbered pages that just carry on with the trust.
So do you disagree with appellant when he argues that Lee benefited greatly in the 2011?
I can't answer that right now because I haven't done that comparison, and I don't really know how much difference it makes when you, I don't know the values of the different parcels offhand, and I don't think there's been any evidence presented about the value of the parcels and how that division compares to a 1/5, which was ultimately given.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have another appellee here yet.
Oh, yep.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Good afternoon, Your Honors.
Good afternoon.
May it please the Court. My name is Damian Wright, and I represent the interest of several of the appellees who are the grandchildren of Ruth and Jean Clayson, specifically the grandchildren who would have been disinherited under the 2008 document but could potentially take under the 2011 estate planning. I will just be brief, and then I've got two general points that I would like to make. First, I want to point out, as Mr. Rowe pointed out, that these are pour-over wills, and the procedural posture of this case is a will contest. The will was admitted to probate. Susan Bayless filed it and attempted to be appointed and there was an objection.
That was the informal offer?
Yes.
That it was admitted?
Yes, and then
okay.
Steve Clayson contested it.
Right.
And that's how we got into a will contest in district court. So the trust itself, if you want to contest a trust, there are separate ways to do that, separate proceedings to do that. Under the trust code, there are various rules regarding modifications for trusts and their validity, et cetera. And so we're not really at that point, although we've been talking a lot about the terms of the trust. Number two, I just want to point out that I think under the case law on undue influence, the law is such that although there are certain factors that come into play and you can look at in terms of evidence, it's sort of a totality of the circumstances, and you look at everything holistically. As the Supreme Court has said, undue influence isn't exercised out in the open, so a lot of times you're looking at circumstantial evidence. That's the law. That's fair enough. I think what the district court correctly discerned here is, taking a step back and looking at it, it's hard to understand sort of a narrative thread here as to why Susan or Lee would have exercised undue influence in this manner. You sort of look at it, I think, as the court is correctly distilling and say, to what end? And I would point out some specific things in the evidence that sort of contradict the theory of the case that Susan and Lee exercised undue influence. First, the evidence presented by the appellant is that Susan and Lee had a lot of animosity. In fact, the appellant's evidence talks about Susan alleging that Lee had was taking money from Ruth Clayson or doing some other nefarious financial thing. So those two working together doesn't make a whole lot of sense when there's animosity between them in the record. The other thing I would point out, Susan invited Steve over to help with taxes, I think it was Steve Clayson, in 2011. So around this time, she was bringing other people in to help look over the finances. The biggest piece of evidence to me is that when it came time to do the actual estate planning, she invited Bonnie and her husband to witness this. So Bonnie is the one who's filed an affidavit alleging Susan's propensity to undue influence. Bonnie was actually at the estate planning ceremony. If you're attempting to exercise undue influence, it seems very odd to invite somebody to it. The other witnesses to this were the neighbors, and in a rural community, if you don't want the town to know about something, certainly don't invite over your neighbors. And so if you're going to exercise undue influence, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And then also, as we've talked about and the court has gleaned in on, it's sort of hard to understand, if you're going to exercise undue influence, why you would shift from specific parcels to then this just one-fifth equal distribution. The evidence from Jared Gregg, and I agree his memory is, perhaps it was hard for him to recall this at times, but when he says that, well, Ruth Clayson told me that she thought her old estate plan was to divide it equally between the five, that makes sense and seems reasonable, and that's what he did, and he didn't have great concern because nobody could find the 2008 estate plan, so they're trying to essentially reinvent it from memory. Well, it's an equal distribution. That was the best that Ruth could recall, and that's what made its way in there. So if it didn't reflect the old estate plan, it seems that the reason for that is just nobody had an explicit copy of it. I have a few moments left. If there are any questions, I would answer them.
Well, so the question overall is, this is a summary judgment. And so we look at this a little bit different than if it had been tried on the complete set of facts. And it, the court is making some factual determinations here. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah, I would respond that I think the as I was reviewing the record, the best point of evidence here is in Steve Clayson's first deposition, and I wasn't involved in the underlying trial portion of this, but at the end of his first deposition, there's the last, it's got to be about 30 pages of the deposition, where one of the attorneys is point blank asking him over and over and starts even going through dates. When did they exercise undue influence? Did they exercise undue influence? And I think he starts on May 10th, around the time of Jean Clayson's funeral, and starts going through kind of day by day of what they do on May 10th that would be undue influence. And Steve Clayson really has no answers for that. And so it's hard to identify where the undue influence is.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
How much time does appellant have remaining?
2 minutes, 21 seconds. Could I ask you, what would you tell us would be your best evidence of a material question of fact here?
The evidence
Well, and I think back to the issue of what's the question here. The question is, are there facts at issue?
But it's got to be a material question.
Yeah, it has to be a material fact. The material facts are the evidence, the testimony that Susan initiated, literally, as near as I recall the evidence, which we've bounced into 29 different things here in reference to evidence today, which I find troubling, candidly. But it's been done, and for whatever it's worth, the evidence that's in the evidence before the court is that Bonnie was part of a plan that Susan cooked to get a new estate plan. All right. So there was a will amendment addressed in 2010, or a trust amendment addressed in 2010, but it was in 2011 that Susan was troubled about the fact that Steve may have some role in a fiduciary relationship to the trust and to the wills that were done in 2008, and that was when and why she perpetrated this effort to change, get a new will, new trust in place. So she was responsible for it. That's the best evidence as far as her involvement and attempting to do this. The various elements, I think, are demonstrated in the evidence that we have. Fortunately or unfortunately, I don't have time to go through all of them, but
let me ask you this,
and they're in the brief.
Let me ask you this then. Since these were both pour-over wills, is it your position that notwithstanding they were pour-over wills, that the trust changed between 2008 and 2011?
It did change. Absolutely, it changed. It changed from specific parcel distribution to an incredible nightmare of a trust that Mr. Gregg, without anybody's request, at his own initiation, created a generation-skipping plan so that none of the kids were going to get anything out of this estate. It was all going to go to the grandchildren or the heirs of the children themselves. It totally, totally created a whole new scheme of estate distribution. And I have no doubt or qualms in saying that Ruth had no idea what she was signing when she signed that new will and trust in 2011.
Yeah.
July 13th of 2011.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brower, Mr. Rowe, and Mr. Wright. You are excused and your case is submitted. And I realize we brought you out to North Platte from the Eastern.